This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report. It's the 12th of October 2009 here in Japan and the 11th of October 2009 in the USA, where I'm joined by Mark of Piercing the Darkness, aka Anti-Illuminati, on the PrisonPlanet.com forum. He's a researcher and writer exposing the information control grid that's all around us as we speak and is being rapidly constructed. So, Mark, it's great to have you back on the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me, James. Pleasure to be here.
All right. Well, we have a number of topics to cover this week. I'm sure there are many things you'd like to cover. I'd like to cover some things like the smart grid and as well as the swine flu vaccine, and I know you've been doing some research on that as well. So there are many things to cover, but why don't we leave it open for you? Whatever you'd like to cover first, whatever's of most importance.
Sure. I think of paramount importance is for people to look at the, you know, couple doctors that have come out with their findings regarding the swine flu, when their information matches up, and that is that this virus has been confirmed that it is an engineered bioweapon. Okay, for one thing. Now, the lesser known thing that I think is causing a lot of confusion about it is that the virus was taken from a sample of a corpse from the 1918 pandemic, and it was reversed, according to Dr. Atru Ott, okay, who's I believe is a naturopath doctor. From his research, he states that artificial intelligence software like Promise, specifically, which is incorporated into a newer software by Oracle called Oracle 8i, and is also tied into a company called Daylight Chemical Corporation. He's saying that they use supercomputers and this software to analyze the DNA molecular structure of the 1918 flu virus, to be able to deconstruct it and, you know, reverse engineer it to create a dual component biological weapon, to where the virus would be manufactured into two separate delivery phases. One is already released globally. Okay, there's reports of the so-called H1N1 virus was already in vaccines from 2008. Okay, so it's already, you know, half of the virus is already spread across the world. It is important to note that the virus is, that both halves of it are in RNA, ribonucleic acid recombinant. Okay, and the intention of this is when they release the second half. Now they can do this in any way that they want. I do not absolutely know for sure if the current vaccine that is being given out is the second half, or if that is just more of, you know, what they've already been releasing, and they're just kind of doing it as a psyop type of a thing to make you think that the vaccine has, you know, has any potential to like keep anyone safe from it or something. I think the reason why I can tell you from my research, one of the reasons that, you know, that I've analyzed why they're putting the vaccine out is they want to solidify in people's minds the terrorist threat. In other words, they want to be able to have people who think, you know, they'll think that, you know, when their family members die, that it will be the fault of those people who refuse the vaccine. So it could like create like a internal conflict of, you know, Americans versus Americans. It's like, hey, you're responsible for one of my family members getting killed because you didn't take the vaccine. Now, there's another thing that ties into this too. A lot of people society is conditioned into thinking that unless everybody takes the vaccine, that everybody's unsafe, that even the people that are vaccinated are not safe. That's how conditioned people are. And this is evident in schools where, you know, some kid's mother will say, well, everybody has to be vaccinated, or they'll freak out over somebody's kid that didn't get vaccinated, because they'll suddenly think that their child will be at risk even though they have the vaccine. They're not, you know, even if you believe that the vaccine is going to help you, they still think that they're at risk unless every single person has it. So they could create like a war. They could create a civil war just between people in that respect, so that they don't even have to, so that they have less people to deal with in the end. And I think that there's, you know, it could be that. I mean, I think that's a, I don't know if you have a comment on that, or if you recognize what I'm talking about with the school analogy.
Absolutely. Of course, that's something that I often point out to people, that that themselves would like everyone to be vaccinated. Of course, the point is, if vaccination actually protects you and gives you immunity, then what's the point of everyone getting vaccinated? You are the only one who needs it. And then, of course, you do definitely see all of the propaganda and the hype that's going on right now in the media about the swine flu vaccine and the regular seasonal flu vaccine. And this, of course, despite recent Canadian study, which showed that people who took the seasonal flu vaccine were twice as likely to get the swine flu. So once again, that jives with the information that you're giving. But I can definitely see that they are trying to ramp up a type of psychological operation based on the vaccines, to use as a wedge to drive people apart on these issues and then to play them one off against each other. So there's undoubtedly that aspect to the operation going on.
And the other thing that's really interesting, and I realized this like about a week ago, this guy Bar Joseph Mosh, the Israeli scientist, he was a virologist with tree viruses. He was the guy that the media told everybody made a threat to the president. Okay, the guy that they had the SWAT team and they hit him with all that tear, you know, a whole bunch of tear gas, and it didn't affect him, or excuse me, pepper spray. And then they had a whole, they had a huge SWAT team, stop him, and they hit him with a taser in the car. This guy, you know, Joseph Mosh, I'm sure you're familiar with that. Well, one thing that's interesting about him, right, is the guy I just mentioned previously, Dr. Atruat, who wrote the article. It's the only source I've ever seen of this. It's regarding the inclusion of the use of Promise to engine the Promise software to engineer this virus, or a derivative of Promise. Like I said, Oracle 8i. Okay. Interestingly, Bar Joseph Mosh called into Dr. Atruat's show. Okay, he was going to call into his show. I'm not sure what happened with that, but that was reported. That's mainstream news. And then subsequent to that, it was said that, when they're saying that he was making a threat to the president, what actually came out was this virologist said that he was going to call the White House. And or he called the White House and he warned them about about what he knew about the bioweapon that they made, and that's why they went and shut him down. And then they took him, they sent him back to Israel. I mean, it was just the guy must have been pretty, he must have been protected or something by Israel, because if that was if that was somebody else that didn't have some kind of high level protection, why would the United States, why would they let somebody go and just send them back on a plane? I mean, they would lock him up and they would make a spectacle out of him in the U.S. and, say he's like some huge national security threat, but they just kind of brush that off,
Very interesting, yes. Especially considering, yeah, of course, we've seen that string of hundreds of biologists and molecular biologists and people working on the very types of things that one would expect to have knowledge in if one wanted to know about, say, resurrecting the 1918 influenza virus. So we've seen a lot of deaths surrounding a lot of microbiologists recently. So to see something like that happening is very suspicious indeed.
Right. And, you know, the other thing, too, is even, let's take this from another perspective, because regarding the psychological aspect of it in terms of I don't have concrete proof that they're going to be able to, that if that's their intention to, like, get, a lot of the public, you know, the people who got the vaccine to be angry at the people who didn't get vaccinated, to blame them. Even if that doesn't happen, the thing that's the other issue is, separate from the vaccine being, you know, part of this bioweapon, you also have the other things, you know, like that have been talked about, like one of your former guests from socio student regarding the squalene and, you know, which is an adjuvant, and, you know, just the other myriad list of toxins that are in there. I mean, even if the vaccine, even if you don't die from their bioweapon, which you can look up online, natural methods of giving yourself a good chance of that not affecting you, like vitamin D, you know, a lot of vitamin D and other things. I mean, people can just look into that. I'm not going to prescribe or pretend that I'm like an authority on, like, this is going to stop this. I'm not going to say anything like that. You can just research that for yourself, anyone who wants to look into it. But, excuse me, the people who get the vaccine, it's like adding, you know, they're going to be hurt regardless just from the other stuff that's in there. So, I mean, there's no reason for anybody to be taking this. This is just completely, there's no vaccine that is warranted to be taken. I mean, even when polio was introduced, polio was introduced basically as a bioweapon, and then the vaccine was created for it after they already created the virus. I mean, the polio virus, or the polio vaccine had some of it had a cancer virus in it, incidentally, which the people that got cured of polio, well, they ended up getting cancer. So it's like people need to look into the real history of vaccines. And a really good site covers some of this. I think it's called Whale, WHALE.TO. It's like a huge repository of information that includes stuff like that.
I would also recommend a site called David Rothscum Reports. I believe it's davidrothscum.blogspot.com, and there's a link up on my page. And he's been writing some very detailed, very interesting reports going into the deep history of vaccinations and some of the key figures that have been involved in developing them over the years. So again, that's a great source of information. But yes, we certainly see that there's not just one attack vector with this swine flu and the vaccines. And I think that might be what confuses some people, that they expect this is simply a bioweapon, or it's simply a hoax, or it's simply an attempt to get money, where it could be all of these things at once. And it could be, of course, something that they're using as a psychological wedge to drive people further apart, at the same time as they're using it to actually deliver the virus, at the same time as they're actually, of course, raking in billions and billions for their business buddies. So these operations work in a way that they can have multiple effects at the same time.
Right, and one of the main things that I've tried to let people know about with documented sources is that this pandemic is, they're intending on using this as a multi-spectrum attack, okay, and incorporating a cyber attack with that. They are really ramping up the propaganda. It's not in the mainstream media yet, but the official policy reports, white papers, and so forth, the official press releases from organizations such as RAND Corporation. They're you know, they're moving to start this phase of complete insanity. I mean, people don't realize it. You know, I saw someone mention that you know, quote, they're taking the internet too seriously in terms of these risks that they're talking about. Well, that's the thing of it is that the New World Order controlled military, particularly the Air Force, they have last year they made the you know, quote, cyberspace an actual warfighting domain that is to them is being regarded exactly the same thing as though it was land, sea, or air. Like it is part of a combat, you know, it's part of a combat zone where they can wage war, and they actually talk about that, waging war in cyberspace. And it's like, are there legitimate enemies in Afghanistan right now? Are we fighting real enemies there? I mean, are we fighting? You know, if that's not legitimate, which it's not, right? Who are they pretending that's going to be the enemy in cyberspace to be fighting? And the government has openly stated in the cybersecurity bill, which I will quote from, that the president can declare any computer system as, quote, critical infrastructure, which means that the mandates being put forth by the New World Order organizations who are residing over this, and that being the Center for Strategic and International Studies and the NCOIC, which is the Network-Centric Operations Industry Consortium, and there's also one other one which I'll mention in a second. It's called NSCAT. As far as what that exactly stands for at the moment, I am not sure. But these are the guys who, along with RAND Corporation's recommendations, you know, they're writing the policy, all of the lockdown control stuff for the internet that they want, and I can guarantee you that in the near future, watch for the massive amount of propaganda you're going to see on mainstream media. Watch for all of the you're going to see Obama spouting ridiculous, complete insanity, claiming that our information technology, you know, cyber infrastructure is at risk, and they're going to just try to convince the people that unless they give up their rights on the internet, unless they submit to having everything, to have stuff filtered out more, that there's going to be, you know, it'd be just like 9/11 or something, that you better give up all your rights or there's going to be a whole bunch of more you know, websites that are going to get attacked. They could. Michael McConnell stated, you know, he came up with this fear mongering that saying that banks in the United States were at risk of cyber attacks. Now, this is the key thing, because we're in this engineered financial crisis. The last thing that any American or anyone in the world, for that matter, is going to want to witness is their bank computer system being damaged or being shut down. Or imagine, say, a million people in the United States, for example, imagine if they suddenly become victims of identity fraud, identity theft. Imagine if their funds in their bank account become just liquidated. They just disappear, zeroed out. Or, you know, that check, that unemployment check they were supposed to get just disappears because of they'll have Janet Napolitano or whoever on TV saying that, you know, this is horrible. We've got Northern Command coming in here to shore up, you know, our security, and we've got new systems. We've got a new router, you know, bank that we're firing up. They'll probably run things. There's this company called Akamai Technologies, who is total New World Order, who they'll probably use for rerouting some of that, like they did with Estonia in 2007. If people want to check out something interesting, the New World Order makes references to their false flags in any of their documents that they put out, where they offer solutions. You know, their solutions. They will always reference different crises that have occurred in the past, and you'll end up running into things that weren't really talked about, even by Patriot radio shows that expose false flags, because they weren't really recognized as such. They were lower key. And I think Estonia was one of those false flags, if you look into it. And I actually have a thread on that I just started the other day, where Estonia was a country of 1.4 million population. It was completely dependent on a digital, cyber infrastructure. Okay. And all of a sudden you have massive distributed denial of service attacks across all of their systems. You have a lot of the Estonian population works overseas, and they were unable to transfer their funds to get their money wired back to their country to be able to feed their families back home. And they were, they said that, okay, the Russian servers, that there's evidence, we have evidence that this traffic came from Russian servers. And, but even RAND Corporation admits that doesn't prove that it originated from Russia. Like, they're just kind of leaving that point hanging there. And they used Estonia as a test, like a beta test, to be able to do this to the United States and across the world. I mean, that's my opinion. I can't like flat out prove this, but if somebody like Alex Jones researched it, I'm sure that he would probably agree. I'm not trying to put words in his mouth or anything like that, but I mean, you understand their modus operandi. When people start, if you start looking at how false flag terror is done, there's a lot of, you begin to understand how they procedurally plan this stuff out. You look at motive. When you look at the USS Liberty, you look at the World Trade Center 93 bombings, you look at Oklahoma City, you look at Columbine, you look at all this stuff. And that's the basis of looking into all this stuff is why I'm even saying this. I'll read you a quote here about something. Just to skip back to the cybersecurity bill, which I hadn't gotten to yet, but I was just going to mention something about it. It's the name of the bill is S.773. It's introduced to the Senate, Senate Cybersecurity Act 2009. Now, there's a section in there. The title of it is Software Configuration Specification Language. Now, basically, before I even read this, you're probably familiar with how tyrannical the healthcare bill is. A lot of people have looked into that. There's a lot of people that are, that's where a lot of the people are waking up from, because healthcare is recognized by basically everybody, and it's a more down-to-earth thing for a lot of people. Not everybody even, uses the internet, but everybody can relate to healthcare. I mean, it's a lot more of a common thing for people to know about. Well, there's things that are just as tyrannical in the cybersecurity bill as there is the healthcare bill, okay? And I'm going to read you a quote from it. It says, "The Institute shall establish standard computer-readable language for completely specifying the configuration of software on computer systems widely used in the federal government, by government contractors and grantees, and in private sector-owned critical infrastructure, information systems, and networks." Now, that allows the government to mandate their software configuration and their own security. They could have, their own quote-unquote security software that they can force any private company to use. And if you don't use it, there won't be a choice. It's just like stuff with the healthcare bill. You won't have a choice. You'll either be fined into oblivion or you'll be arrested or whatever. they're basically talking about, when they're talking about standard computer readable language, there's an article that ties into that, that explains like what the implications of that is. And this is a title from an article. It says, OMG, which Object Management Group, pushes standards for verifying software security framework, would be an aid to vendors and government buyers. I'm not going to read that because it would take too long. But basically, the type of, when they talk about, quote, computer, standard computer readable language, what they're really talking about when you break it down is they're talking about PTEC. Because Object Management Group is the company that is the standardized, they standardize all of the, all of those computer language standards globally, like the ISO standards, for example. They're the company that does that for everyone. And in 1997, PTEC submitted their, they submitted their package to Object Management Group to be a candidate for, to be included in their standardization, and they're the ones that won. So what the bottom line is that the government is going to make the same backdoor stuff that they carried out 9/11 with, that was involved with that. They're going to put that on all the computers, and they can even do it to your computer in your house, because the president can just declare that your computer in your home is part of critical infrastructure. And the way they can do that is this stuff has already happened in the past, right? They talk about botnets. There's a bunch of zombie computers out here, and all of them, we found that they were hacking into, the Defense Information Systems Agency, or they were attacking Lockheed Martin, or they were attacking the Pentagon, or they're attacking the White House or something, anything. Or they're attacking hospitals or banks or police departments or InfraGuard, anything you can imagine. And then Obama can come on and say, well, we're going to have to declare your home computer as part of critical infrastructure because he's going to blame the American people. You're being irresponsible because you've got buggy software on your machine and your computer. It's your fault that your systems are participating in network attacks against our government system. So that means we're going to send people out and we're going to format your hard drive or whatever. We'll find out everything you have on your computer. And by the way, if you have anything that we find objectionable, we'll charge you for that. We'll punish you for that, etc. And this all ties into everything else about how, the whole idea of being able to send people to your house. The healthcare bill has something about where it allows CPS to be able to come into your home without even, no probable cause, or like even if you don't even have kids, to see that if the way you live, according to their standards, is suitable for you to have children. I mean, it's all about, that's what this whole thing is. There's all these different things that are converging. There's all these different areas where they can come into your house to be able to investigate your personal property and confiscate whatever they want, or fine you, or just take, just do whatever, And let me just read you something right here. This is from October 8th, okay? This is from RAND Corporation. The title is, U.S. must focus on protecting critical computer networks from cyber attack. Quote, because it will be difficult to prevent cyber attacks on critical civilian and military computer networks by threatening to punish attackers, the United States must focus its efforts on defending these networks from cyber attack, according to a new RAND Corporation study. The study finds that the United States and other nations that rely on externally accessible computer networks, such as ones used for electric power, telephone service, banking, and military command and control, as a foundation for their military and economic power are subject to cyber attack. And it goes on and on and on with just, they're even saying that your cell phone is a risk. You know, those cell phones that, I don't know what, most of them, if not all now, they have internet capability, don't they? They have internet access?
Well, certainly the ones in Japan do, yeah.
Okay. So they're including those into their threat profile, you know, their threat assessment, that these are, that anything that accesses the internet is a risk, and we have to take action to infringe upon your rights. You know, because otherwise, if you don't let us do that, we're going to carry out attacks. I mean, there's, on another note real quick, this is very alarming. You just had John Elway with his commercial, defending Bilderberg and, defending people at the Federal Reserve and so forth with his 8 signs of how to watch for terrorists. You have that. You have a video now about a drill, improved explosive device drills being carried out at shopping malls. That's a red flag, folks. They're getting ready to carry out bombings. If they're doing drills, that means they're going to stay. That means they are gearing up to carry out false flags in the future. I mean, that's what it's always been. Every time there's a drill, you eventually see that happen. It's just a question of when,
if not.
Exactly.
Yeah,
The point is that those drills are illegitimate. Nobody's going to be doing stuff like that. Okay. There's never been a need before. In the 1980s, in the 1990s, there's never all these drills that they're doing stuff for. Nobody ever did any of that stuff. And if it did happen, it would be such an isolated incident that it would be trivial. It would be meaningless. I mean.
So just to be clear here, I guess the point is that the technology, of course, the technological capability already exists for the government to sneak into whatever crook and cranny of your computer or even your home that they want to. But what they need is that sort of catalyzing event to shape people's perception to accept this new invasions into their personal lives.
Right.
So it's kind of a psychological operation more so than even a technological one.
Right. Well, there's people that would disagree with what I'll say here, but one of the points of this is that if you are astute enough with computer technology and software, you can make your computer immune to their snooping, relatively. With the exception of Tempest, because that really would be pretty impractical, but that's still pretty huge because, I mean, they're not, for them to want to use Tempest on you would require like some effort, it wouldn't be like as easy as a lot of the other things. But if I'm just going to throw this out there without getting into detail. If somebody is running an operating system, Solaris 10 or something, or they're running free BSD and they're using virtual machines and they have intrusion detection systems that are using like things like pfSense, and they know what they're doing. I mean, you can make your computer an extreme pain for the government to want to even bother with you. Okay, I'm not even going to say that it's impervious. I'm just going to say that it would be a pain. It would be a pain for them to do anything. You know, they would just say, okay, whatever. Right.
Well, the majority of people out there, the government, to a large extent, doesn't particularly care what any individual has. It's the obviously key individuals are targeted, and however they have to do it, they will be able to find a way to access those systems. But to me, it's the idea of changing people's perception to accept this all-encompassing control grid that there is nowhere to hide. And once they have that established, then they can bring the tyranny out in the open, I guess.
Yeah, to finish what I was saying, I agree with that too. I'm not saying that there's one facet to this. There could be multiple reasons that are just as valid or just as have just as much weight. But the thing, what I was trying to say, is they're making it so that there's no way that you can protect yourself from them. They will have control, and they'll be able to spy on you even more than they can right now. And I think one of the things that ties into this, and this is brand new, this just came out, this heavily ties into this whole thing. WikiLeaks put out a thing that says, EU social network spy system brief, indexed work package 4. It says, this file marked confidential describes development of an EU-funded intelligence gathering system, indexed work package 4, designed to comb weblogs, chat sites, news reports, and social networking sites in order to build up automatic dossiers on individuals, organizations, and their relationships. Quote, the aim of Work Package 4, WP4, is the development of key technologies that facilitate the building of an intelligence gathering system by combining and extending the current state-of-the-art methods in natural language processing, NLP. One of the goals of WP4 is to propose NLP and machine learning methods that learn relationships between people and organizations through websites and social networks. Key requirements for the development of such methods are, 1, the identification of entities, their relationships, and the events in which they participate, and 2, the labeling of the entities, relationships, and events in a corpus that will be used as a means both for developing the methods. And, of course, the PTEC ties into that, or artificial intelligence. It doesn't, call it agile.
Of course, yeah. This goes back a long time. This goes back years into the whole idea of data mining. But I was just reading the other day, I was reading a speech that Admiral Poindexter gave when he was introducing the Information Awareness Office back in 2002. And it's exactly that type of thing that they were trying to set up back in 2002 to create these relational databases based on transactional data, mostly at that point. But of course, with the advent of social networking, it's just really making their job that much easier that they can identify social links between people that you've identified for them. So it's just a whole new level of Orwellian tyranny where people actually participate in their own enslavement.
Yep. One thing I want to point out is, and I can never get over this because, this information that I'm going to mention, it's like, if there was a hearing or like some kind of a big meeting about this stuff, about cybersecurity, I mean, the American people, if they were given the opportunity, there are public admissions of things that could be thrown directly in the face of all of these people calling for this, the demands of all this tyranny and all this unconstitutional things that they want to carry out, that it could completely discredit them. I mean, even their own affiliated companies that they work with to test systems for cybersecurity could discredit them. And I mentioned this a long time ago, actually, when I called into Alex's radio show, but I think it warrants being mentioned again. And this is just one example, but if they have stuff like this, then there's no excuse from, even if you want to believe that, that their concerns, that what they're saying is legitimate and that they're not intending on carrying out black ops, because apparently people still don't get that's really what happens. It makes them have absolutely no credibility. And there's a technology, a networking, hardware network company called TechGuard Security. They make a product called the TechGuard Polywall. Okay. And an excerpt from this article that is from the advisory committee to the Congressional Internet Caucus says, in reference to this filter, this internet filtering system for security, says the user will be able to launch mock cyber attacks from China and then use the polywall to block the attack with one click of a mouse. The user will then see the resulting graph, which will have all attacking traffic stopped by the polywall, and the United States and coalition partners' traffic still going through the device. It says that it's just saying that it stops. They're just admitting it, that all of the traffic, you know, because since they're mentioning countries, this particular device, they're making a specific mention that it can block, you know, entire IP, the whole IP chunks of, like, say, China and Russia. If they're worried about China and Russia, if that's where the attacks come from, hey, guess what? You can use that solution right there if you were really interested in security. Now, they know about this because Northern Command actually shows that they used this product in one of their own manuals from the Coalition Warrior Interoperability Demonstration website. It's a .mil website where they show that they use this, and in their PDF file they show that, you know, that they can block that during military operations, for example, that they can block, you know, they can block information from who they consider the enemy, like Iran and whoever else. Okay, and then they also mentioned that they can block groups of IPs and stuff like that. And the point is that if you guys have, you're lying, you know, you're lying that you need all this stuff for security because you already have security solutions that can deal with this. That's not the only thing. Back in 10 years ago, DARPA had a project they were working on. Let's see if I can find it real quick. It was called Emerald. It's an article from DefenseLink.mil from the August 14th of 2000. They had this, you know, the way they're talking about this, like as though it was so incredible, and this is 9 years ago. So if they had this technology back then, what's the problem today? It says, Emerald is a gem in the world of cyber defense. Developed by SRI International and DARPA, Emerald's ability to detect computer hackers and other intruders surpasses current technology, said Michael Scratch, program manager of DARPA Information Assurance Program. They say the new technology is needed. We're seeing an increase in the number of attacks and the severity of attacks in the cyber domain, et cetera. I'm just going to stop there. They're acting like, you know, if they were being serious, excuse me, what happened to all the solutions that you guys claimed, you know, said you were working on before to deal with this stuff? It's the point is that they're lying, obviously. That's how you prove they're lying, because they don't care about security. They don't care about security for the American people or for any other free people in the world, except for the New World Order, except for the elite, except for the criminals, so that they can lock down the internet and filter your access. Or even, I was listening to your interview the other day on that show that you did. That's an interesting point that was brought up, where they don't even necessarily have to block something. They can just make it so expensive that you wouldn't be able to afford to go there. That's a good point. They could certainly do it that way too.
Absolutely. You know, I think it's like when you look at martial law is of course the thing that they have in their back pocket to go to if they ever want to begin the mass roundups. But rather than thinking of it as just the one big event, it's actually a process of increasing stages of indoctrination, whereby people will gradually come to accept the next level and the next level and the next level, so that there may not be that one day where everything changes. It may just be a gradual process that people come to accept. And it's the same thing with internet regulation. It's the same thing with these cybersecurity type things. it may not be that one event that's going to change the world. It might just be a slow creeping series of incremental changes that will eventually people will just accept as normal because that's the way we're trained to do it. And of course, obviously DARPA and all of these governmental agencies have technologies that are so far in advance of what we have on our desktop that the idea that a bunch of, you know, zombie computers, some botnet controlled from Chinese hackers is going to be able to effectively infiltrate the most secretive systems in the US government is on its face just a ridiculous proposition. And the only thing that they would ever theoretically have to worry about would be advanced attacks from other intelligence agencies. But of course, as Wired pointed out, even back in 1993, they had identified people like Edward Meese, who had been, of course, stealing and then selling the Promise software to other intelligence agencies like those in Israel. And of course, the implication is that, yes, of course, they engineered in their little back door so that, in fact, they were the ones who were gaining access to other intelligence agencies, certainly not the other way around. So on its face, it's just a complete and utter fraud and a sham. But changing gears slightly, but staying on the topic of the idea of this governmental invasion, I'd like to draw on your research about a topic that I find it difficult to wrap my mind around, and I'm sure a lot of my listeners do too, and that's the smart grid. And I'd like to hear from your perspective, what is the smart grid, how it's being created, and how this nexus is in with all of these subjects that we're talking about?
Well, okay, the smart grid is a two-way, it's a power delivery system that involves two-way communications to where the power company is sending a data stream along with the electrical current. Okay, and that is, and then your usage, your appliances, the newer appliances that are that have been made, they actually have more advanced. Well, they have this type of 1984 type restriction capability built into it, where they can tie that into your carbon footprint and so forth, and they can actually, like, here's what I'm trying to say. They can, you know how, like, when you use a calling card for a phone, or use a card with minutes on it or something, when you, with the smart grid, they can make it so that you have to pay on a per-use basis for the appliances in your home. That's one of the things they can do with it. Instead of just paying, like, flat, you know, your flat just electric bill, they can charge you on a per-use basis. So in other words, they can make things, you know, they claim that they're giving you more control over your use of your electricity when they're, you know, like more options. In other words, the insinuation is that, and this is what Obama even said this, that, you know, that utility prices, it was either the word utility or electric power or whatever he said, basically the same thing. He said that those prices would necessarily skyrocket. You remember when he said that? So the implication is that electric power will be so expensive that you'll have to be able to use it on a, like, as though the power would be shut off or something. Like, you have to use it on a, we have to give you a per use ability, and to where it can even tell you that you shouldn't use it today. I mean, they have appliances that can even, they're even going to dictate to you, like, you know, like, you're not allowed to use the dishwasher or something. I mean, like, you've used too many carbon credits. You're not allowed to use your washing machine or your dryer or something like that. I mean, that's the level of insanity behind that. They talk about, well, I guess the main thing of it is that it puts the whole grid on an architecture where they can selectively, if they wanted to knock something out or, you know, carry out a false flag on the power grid somewhere, they could do it on a smaller, you know, section. instead of like wiping out a whole area, because they have more control over it. It's, you know, they have more control over it due to the way it's that they have it set up. And this is something that ties into this. There's actually an article on this on Rents.com, and there's corroborating evidence. In 2003, when there was that big power outage in the northeast of the United States, I found evidence that that was actually done with promise, believe it or not. That promise was actually used to knock out the power grid. And the guy who reportedly was responsible was Israeli Mossad, and his name was Rafi Eitan. And the reason why I say that, I have confidence in saying that that's probably what happened, is because there's documentation that follows after that that talks about the solution for why did this happen. This, you know, 45 million people, I believe it was, lost electricity in several states and some provinces. I think it was 8 states. And all of the solutions involve the mention of cybersecurity across the board. Cybersecurity and being enforced by the Department of Homeland Security. Homeland Security steps in, and there's all this cybersecurity policy stuff that comes on the heels of the 2003 blackout. Nobody was even really talking about, quote, cybersecurity in 2003. That's a term that's only really come about, I mean, for the most part, in the last 2 years or so. And so it was stated that the whole power grid, supposedly, when the guy did that with the software, he was not really trying to knock the whole power grid out. He was just, you know, he didn't expect the whole thing to knock out that much stuff. It was like a test that they did. You know, it was, I'm not even saying it was necessarily a, when you read the article, it doesn't come off as though it was a terror, like a false, like terror attack per se. Is they talk about in the context of that it was a test that against the power grid systems. For whatever reason, they wanted to do that. Well, I mean, I guess I think you could, I would say you might as well just say it could be construed as a false flag, because it has a problem reaction solution element to it that's very clear. If they had the smart grid, that wouldn't have happened necessarily, because it would be, there would be separations, and it sounds like I'm supporting it, but it gives them more control. It gives them the ability to control your life more. I mean, like I mentioned before, I think that some of the meters they use, PG&E is one of the companies. There was a big report about how those meters were charging 3 times the cost for the same electrical usage as an analog meter. And it was proven. The employees that worked for the power company were demanded by the homeowner to, in front of them, test an analog meter versus their PG&E smart meter. And the smart meter was charging, you know, they found it was charging 3 times the amount for the same power, you know, the same draw of power from the supply. So you have that. I mean, they could extort people that way, and you can't. And the other thing is a black hat conference. I think an element of the smart grid is just that it's just a huge waste of money. In one respect, it's a waste of money because it's not necessary. I mean, the whole idea is putting an internet component into electrical power. That's the big thing. Why does the internet have to be? Why does the internet have to be overlapping a power? You know, be connected to the power grid. I mean, that's not necessary. You know what I mean? They could design this for true. You know, if they wanted to really make it secure and like not have blackouts and all this stuff, there's other ways they could do it other than having basically the internet being part of the part of what gets sent down over to your house. Now, they propagandize that you can they show a family. There's a video on YouTube, family in Colorado of a whole city that's been converted. And they show that The guy's logging into a Cisco router, and he's able to view where his power is coming from, like what percentage of the electricity he's using is from coal or from, you know, from natural gas or from wind power. And I say, who cares? They sell that as though that it's something you should want, like you should think it's cool, like it's a great feature. Who cares? I think that the thing behind that is just they can use that to, you know, they'll have more control over it, which allows them to selectively do whatever they want. They could shut someone's, you know, they could shut one person's power off in an entire neighborhood instead of killing everyone's power with a smart grid. That's one point right there. Okay, that's, you know, your house will have an IP address that's tied into your power that's going to your house. Unlike now, where if you can't, they can't just shut off the power without having a reason to do that. Like if your electric bill isn't paid or something, you know, it just gives them more control over something they don't need. I think it's just a huge waste of money. It's kind of like this idea of building all these windmills and stuff like that. These factories to build windmills. There's plenty of oil. I mean. They're going to make these jobs for what? You know, what is that? It's just like part of the economy drain. It's another tool. It's another mechanism of draining the economy. When I have Josh on next time, we'll go more into this because he may have other things. There's more to it. That's not something I've been focusing on so much as this other stuff. I know we're almost out of time. I want to mention something very important really fast. On a different subject, back kind of like what I was talking about. There's a show on TV that's called NCIS, okay? It's like some kind of law enforcement show showcasing Homeland Security. It's a very alarming thing that I saw a few days ago on it. Now, I say this in reference to things like before 9/11, how you had the lone gunman and so forth, and then you had things like that. You had... you even had the Matrix showing that the expiration date on the guy's passport was, 9/11/01, right? Well, this was really disturbing because in NCIS, they showcased a U.S. Air Force Predator UAV, unmanned aerial vehicle, allegedly being, they're showing it being hacked into by Al-Qaeda. They even included the jihadist manuals and all the, their writing and everything, just like as though it was 9/11 or something, that type of propaganda that they had 8 years ago. And this thing was, it fires a Hellfire missile and kills somebody, and then the guy's intention is to go and attack a school with a UAV Predator drone. And you'd fire the missile at the school. And it's almost like they read, I'm serious when I say this, it's almost like they read, like, the Prison Planet form or something and decided to make a script based on everything there or something, because it's so ridiculous. And it's all, they're showing command centers, like the, like, fusion center things with, like, 15 different LCDs. And they were selling the idea that, hey, UAVs can be hacked into. Now, why am I saying this is a serious thing? Because there was just an article talking about, in Arizona, I believe, or no, in Nevada. They were talking about, oh, there's a threat. The Taliban is seeking to get into Nellis Air Force Base to use UAVs to commit terror attacks. That was an actual article, okay? So this agenda has been put out there as a possible false flag avenue. I mean, from all these disparate sources, and it's really serious because in that film of NCIS, they lie and they act like that drones cannot fly themselves, when the document from the Air Force headquarters that I have on the forum, I mean, you can just download it. It says that they can fly autonomously. They don't need pilots. They don't even, you know, they can pre-program them, or they can, you know, at the very least, they can do that. The document says they can be pre-programmed, so no one has to fly anything. And they can be hacked into by by their architecture that's built with artificial intelligence, but that can't be hacked into by the American people or anyone else. The government can hack into it. You know, all the DOD agencies and the defense contractors, whichever ones are given the access to, you know, to the code, to read that, you know, to use that to, you know, to use P-TECH basically. Yeah, they can do it, but there's no run-of-the-mill person that can do that. So that's a really serious thing that needs to be exposed. I mean,
I couldn't agree more.
And of course, they could use that to say that the internet needs to be shut down from that, because and a UAV can carry a nuke, by the way. They can put a nuclear tip missile on there. Imagine that. So there you have that, and they could blame Iran or something and say it was Iran that hacked into a UAV. They set off a nuke or whatever, and it's over right there. And it's impossible.
It's certainly totally is. Ridiculous. And we are seeing more and more of this being implanted into the media in various ways, including, of course, the recent story that there was a CERN worker who is apparently a diehard Al-Qaeda jihadist, but luckily they caught him before he could, I guess, create the black hole that would swallow the world. But speaking of pre-programming, of course, it was only a few months before 9/11 that the Lone Gunman pilot episode came out, positing that Boeings could be hacked into and flown into the World Trade Center. Just a few months before it really happened. So obviously watching how we're being programmed via television shows to expect something to happen is extremely important. So I hope people will check into that for themselves. And for people who are interested in any of the things that we've discussed this week, of course, next week, as you mentioned, we'll be talking with yourself and Josh again for 2 hours. But I guess for people, just wrapping it up here, for people who are interested more in what we've talked about today, will you be creating a thread for today's discussion?
Yeah, I will.
Okay, excellent. Well, I'll put that up in the documentation list, so people, when they go to CorbettReport.com, can click on the documentation tab and find the link to that thread. All right, Mark, it's been a fascinating conversation as always, and I'm looking forward to talking with you again next week.
All right, it's been a pleasure, James.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.